So what we will do next is I will say what I always do, and you can go ahead and do it if you would. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is the book of Devarim, or Deuteronomy, and we are now in chapter 16, towards the end of the chapter, verse 18. And it says this, first word is Shoftim, and that word means judges. That, of course, is the name of the Parsha because it is the first unique word. And it also begins a sentence that says, Shoftim ve Shotrim. And that word is usually rendered as officers. So judges and officers you shall provide, or you shall have, in all your gates and all your cities, which Yehuyarel is giving you, tribe by tribe. And this is key, and wouldn't it be neat if we had this in the United States? They shall judge the people with me Shofet Zadik. It's actually Zedek, I think. But anyway, the key word there is righteousness. So someone who is Torah obedient, understanding, and operating in accord with his instruction, that word is Zadik. Plural, it's Zadikim. Judgment that is righteous and so forth is how it's applied. Judges should be righteous. Anyway, that word is going to appear a number of times in the Parsha, and it's very important. And again, like I said, wouldn't it be cool if we actually had that still? You shall not wrest judgment. What, you mean you shouldn't charge people with crimes that aren't crimes? Yeah. Look at what's going on today, folks. Everything in this portion ought to leap off the page at us. You shall not wrest judgment. You shall not respect persons. In other words, you don't go after somebody just because they're running for president. You don't go after somebody because you don't like them. You don't go after somebody because they're the president's son and they can get away with crimes or whatever. You also don't give people a pass for the opposite reason. And you can go through the list and think about it. Nor shall you take a bribe or a gift. A gift or a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the Zadikim, the righteous. And then we get to this one. I'm going to suggest this is probably one of the most important verses in the Parsha, perhaps in the book, and it goes like this. Justice, justice, Zedek, Zedek, you shall follow or you shall pursue so that you might live and inherit the land which Yehuyarel is giving you. Now, one of several things is true, probably all of the above. One, when you see a word in the Hebrew that's doubled up like that, it's for emphasis, no doubt about it. But there are also, I think, a lot of commentaries, midrash, people that have looked at it. I would be among those that would suggest when you see the word doubled like that, it's also indicating that there is more to it. In other words, there's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. That's one way to think about it. And you're to pursue justice in both of those things, strict and in accord with his will and his word. So all of that applies. And justice, justice, you shall pursue. Again, wouldn't it be nice if that concept even remotely still exists in the United States? And I'll admit, as I read this year, it seems particularly poignant because we have a nation now that not only has and I'll be as kind as I can, shat upon the rule of law, the concept of justice, justice you shall pursue, but literally everything that's associated with what once made this nation a nation that was obedient to Yah. And furthermore, it says, this is kind of interesting, that it would be the next verse, right? You shall not plant an Asherah, a tree, a grove, you know, the phallic symbol, well, that we see multiplied in places like Vatican City and in so many places that have gone pagan or continued to be pagan. Don't plant an Asherah tree of any kind besides the altar of Yehuah Yirel, which you shall make you. Nor shall you set up a pillar. There's another phallic symbol. Look at the penis of Ra there in the mall in Washington, D.C., for example, which Yehuah Yirel hates. That's pretty clear, isn't it? Nor shall you sacrifice unto Yehuah Yirel an ox or a sheep, anything wherein there is a blemish, wherein any evil or even any evil thing. I'm sorry here. I'm going to pause and get rid of whatever that is that's making that noise. Okay. Okay. So don't sacrifice anything that has a blemish. any evil thing. This, he says, is an abomination unto Yahuwah Yireh. If, in fact, there is found in the midst of you, within any of your gates, which Yahuwah Yireh is giving you, man or woman that does that thing which is evil in the sight of Yahuwah Yireh, in transgressing his covenant, and he's gone and served other gods and worshipped them, or the sun or the moon or any of the hosts of heaven, which I have not commanded you to do, and it's told to you, and then you hear it, you shall... Now, let's just pause a second. Because today, what are they doing? They teach that in the cesspools. We have that literally run amok in the United States. So it's kind of hard, and indeed the rest of the world too. It's kind of hard to imagine how it would be anything other than the fact that they would revel in it, right? They got their rainbow flags. They got all their abominations. Somebody's gone and worshipped other gods, served them, things that he has not commanded, and you hear about it. You're to inquire diligently. And behold, if it's true. You see it on CNN, for example. They're proud of it. They're pride-filled, as a matter of fact. And the thing is made certain that such abomination is being wrought in Israel. Oh, see, this is why we were kicked out of the land. It's in Israel, right? Then you shall bring forth that man or that woman who's done this evil thing out to your gates, even that man or that woman, and you shall stone them with stones so that they die. Now, here we see again, a death penalty requires not one, but two witnesses. At the mouth of two or more witnesses, or three, shall he that is to die be put to death. At the mouth of one witness, no one shall be put to death. The hand of the witness shall be the first upon him to put him to death. Afterward, the hand of all the other people. So you shall, listen to this, put away the evil from the midst of you. Irony, right? The evil now has taken over. The evil is rampant, and they're teaching it to kids and subsidizing it. If there arises a matter that's too hard for you in judgment, between blood and blood, kin, between plea and plea, stroke and stroke, even matters of controversy within your gates, well, then you shall arise, and you get up to the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose, so the place where he's put his name, and you shall come there unto the Kohanim, the Levites, and unto the judge that shall be in those days, and you will inquire, and they will declare unto you the sentence of judgment. So you may have heard the term Sanhedrin. That's the general understanding that Israel used, the 70 judges that were there in the place, later it was Jerusalem, of course, where they would sit. Kind of like a supreme top court for which that's the final appeal. You shall do, it says, according to the tenor of the sentence which they shall declare unto you from that place which Yahuwah shall choose. And you shall observe to do all, according to all that they shall teach you. And here's one that I'm going to correct. According to the law, Torah is the word that's used in Hebrew here. According to the instruction, it makes more sense, doesn't it? Which they shall teach you. Remember, the law, statutes, judgments, and commanded is a less inclusive word than instruction, which includes statutes and judgments and commandments, and also precedents and stories and understandings and examples. So according to all the instruction which they teach you, according to the judgment which they shall tell you, you shall do. Do not turn aside from that sentence which they declare unto you, not to the right hand nor to the left. Now, the man that does presumptuously and does not hearken to the Kohen that stands to minister there before Yahuwah, your El, or unto the Shofet, the judge, that man shall die, and you shall exterminate the evil from Israel. And all the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Again, I pause and I think, wouldn't it be cool if we had judges and righteous judgment in America and people that were guilty of treason and mass murder and executions and genital mutilation of children and, you know, fill in the blank, just about anything you can flip on the TV and see that's being pushed from sea to no longer shining sea, if they would suffer the consequences of that evil and hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. That would be a major change, wouldn't it? Again, as I go through this, folks, I'll admit it. I read this most years, and I say, wow, how far we have come. Yes, we are in exile. Yes, so much of this would have been cool and was, and this, of course, is part of the reason, a big part of the reason why Israel and then later Judah, the southern kingdom, were both kicked out of the land and sent into exile. And it certainly is a reason why this nation, among others, which, as Ben Franklin said, would be ruled righteously for a while, would eventually fall into despotism. And that's where we are. That's the opposite of justice, you shall pursue. So when you've come into the land, he says, which Yehoiarel gives you, and you possess it, and you dwell there, and you say, hey, I think I'll set a king over me like all the nations which are round about. Now, if you go and look, you'll see that's described in detail. They did it in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 8. You shall in no way set a king, well, no, you first, the positive. You shall set a king over you whom Yahuwah your El shall choose. And remember, the prophet in those days, Samuel in the case of the first one, Saul, would anoint that king. One from among your brethren you shall set over you as king. Foreigners? Nope. You're not to put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. And there are some requirements for this king. And interestingly, kind of like what we see in modern times as well, these are being ignored. He is not to multiply horses to himself. Now, multiply is an interesting word here. Hey, he can have a horse or two, probably even a stable of them, but he's not to have literally loads and loads and loads of them. Nor is he, because this might be a cause to allow the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses, because Yahuwah has said to you, you shall not return any more that way. So the reason for this one is described to us. It says he doesn't want horses that would allow people to say, hey, let's head them up, move them out, head back to Egypt, because it's not like they haven't heard that before. Now, other commandments that apply specifically to kings. He shall not multiply wives to himself. Notice it doesn't say add wives. David had a bunch of wives, and he was not only not criticized for it. He was told that if he'd wanted more, he'd have been given more. But somewhere between David and his son Solomon, where looks like Solomon multiplied wives, things got out of control. Now, one of the ways you'll sometimes see this rendered is, having multiple wives, fine, but a harem, not so much. Solomon had, as you know, lots and lots of wives and concubines. And why? Well, we saw this with Solomon, that his heart does not turn away. Literally, his foreign wives, and there were many of them, as a matter of fact, one of the things that seems to have been violated by Solomon, Shlomo, was that he made marriages with foreign wives, specifically by way of setting up treaties. Okay, let's have a treaty with country X, country Y, country Z. I'll take a wife from there. Nor shall he greatly multiply. He can have lots. Nor shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And it shall be, now this is another one that I always point out and say, wow, this is kind of cool. Imagine, for example, if we had a president that even read the Constitution, knew what form of government we had, or even could make a copy just of the ten Bill of Rights. Well, the commandment here is that the king of Israel was to, in his own hand, make a copy of the Torah. Now it says this book, and this Torah, and sometimes, I guess because it doesn't require quite so much writing, this was understood to be the Book of Devarim, or the second statement. In other words, Moshe's final speech here, which would have still been quite a commandment, and it makes sense. So listen to what it says about that. See, he sits upon the throne of his kingdom. He's to write out a copy of this Torah in a book, out of that which is before the priests, the Kohanim, the Levites. And this shall be with him, he says, and he shall read from it, read therein, all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear Yehoiazel, to keep all of the words of this instruction and these statutes, to do them. And as you might suspect, there were very few kings that actually did this, and we saw the wicked fruit of that. Why? Well, this is also interesting. So that his heart is not lifted up. Oh, I'm better than you, you deplorables, you. Above his brethren, you flyover country, white extremist, domestic terrorists. So that his heart is not lifted up above his brethren, and he does not turn aside from the commandment, not to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days and his kingdom, he and his children, in the midst of Israel. All right, next chapter. The priests, the Kohanim, the Levites, even all the tribe of Levi, so not just the Kohanim, but all of the Levites, shall have no portion nor inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of Yahuwah made by fire and his inheritance. That is, in fact, he is their inheritance. They shall have no inheritance among their brethren. Yahuwah is their inheritance. Here he says it again. As he has spoken unto them. And this shall be the due of the Kohanim from the people. From them that offer a sacrifice, and that word there is zebach, whether it's an ox or a sheep, that they give it to the priest, the shoulder and the two cheeks and the maw. Now, the first four fruits, the first fruits of your corn, of your wine, of your oil, and the first of the fleece of your sheep also you shall give to him. So these were the required offerings, literally for the sustenance of the Kohanim. For Yehu-Yireel has chosen him out of all your tribes to stand and minister in the name of Yahuwah, him and his sons forever. Now, if a Levite comes from any of your gates out of all of Israel, where he sojourns, and he comes with all the desire of his soul unto the place which Yahuwah shall choose, then he shall minister in the name of Yahuwah Eloheka, as all his brethren, the Levites, do who stand there before Yahuwah. Notice, this makes a lot more sense if you understand the name that they're to minister in is the real name, the name that we have literally seen removed from our Bibles. And he would have ministered not in the name of the Lord, but in the name that they knew, and especially in the place where he put his name. You'd think they'd know it there. He shall minister in the name of Yehu-Azel, as his brethren, the Levites, do. Okay, they shall have like portions to eat beside that which is due according to their father's houses. When you've come into the land which Yehu-Yireel gives you, you shall not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. So here it is again. We see a commandment, one that Joshua seemed to have forgotten later. Make no treaty with the inhabitants of the land. It's all about the reason these tribes, these peoples, are being kicked out is because they did these abominations. Don't learn to do likewise. There shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or his daughter to pass through the fire. I guess no abortion clinics in the land. No sacrament of human, well, even if they wanted to harvest the organs. No one makes his son or daughter pass through the fire, so that's a reference to the way that they sacrificed children to Molech, but they had other ways of doing it too, and we're seeing those today. One that uses divination. Nope, shouldn't find one of those either. Not a soothsayer, nor an enchanter, nor a sorcerer, or a charmer, or anyone that consults a ghost, or a familiar spirit, or a necromancer, someone that talks to the dead. For whosoever does any of these things is toiba. That word there is abomination. Again, it's the strongest word in the Hebrew language. He hates this. An abomination unto Yahuwah. And because of these abominations, Yehu-Yireel is driving them out from before you. We're going to see how serious this is in just a second. You shall be wholehearted with Yehu-Yireel. Because these nations, he says, that you're to dispossess, they hearken to those folks, the soothsayers, the diviners. I guess nowadays we'd say we have better ones. We have AIs that who knows what those are consulting with. they lie as well, we found out. But as for you, Yehu-Yireel has not suffered you to do so. Now, here is one of the, I would say, key portions in the Scripture when it comes to understanding the Mashiach himself. And it's probably, it's interesting for a lot of reasons, one of which is, and the sages will point this out, this is the only place in the Torah. Remember, these are words that Moshe is speaking. This is the only place in the whole Torah where Moses self-describes as a prophet. Notice how he puts it. This is Moses again speaking. A prophet will Yehu-Yireel raise up unto you from the midst of you out of your brethren like unto me. A prophet like unto Moses is the term you'll hear, a prophet like unto Moshe. To him you shall hearken, according to all that you did desire of Yehu-Yireel in Horeb on the day of the assembly. In other words, you asked for it, and you're going to get it. And you said, and he reminds him, don't let me hear again the voice of Yahuwah my El, because, oh man, I just can't hack it, right? Don't let me see this great fire anymore, that I die not. Scared the living you-know-what out of them. And they came to Moshe, and they just said, whoa, from here on out, you know, you speak to us, and we would sure like a prophet like unto you in time to come. And Yahuwah said unto me, this is Moses speaking again, well, what they have said is well spoken. I will, in fact, I'll raise up a prophet from among their brethren like unto you, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. And it shall come to pass that whoever will not hearken, hear and obey unto that, my words, through this individual, which he shall speak in my name Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, I will require it of him. In other words, I will hold to task those who won't listen to this prophet like unto Moshe. But that prophet that speaks a word presumptuous me in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or that he speaks in the name of other gods, that same prophet shall die. Now, if you say in your heart, how will we know the word which Yahuwah has not spoken? How can we be not deceived? When a prophet speaks in the name of Yahuwah, if the thing doesn't happen, if it does not come to pass, well, then it's something which Yahuwah has not spoken. The prophet has spoken it presumptuously. You shall not be afraid of him. And notice, folks, this is not the only test. I will suggest there's another easy one. If a prophet contradicts the word of Yah, he's a liar and the truth is not in him. Notice, of course, that for that reason, the very first words that Yahuwah, the prophet like unto Moshe spoke in Matthew chapter 5, right in his first public address, right? I don't think for a second that I have come to do away with the Torah or the prophets. As long as heaven and earth still exist, not one yod or tittle is going to pass from the Torah until everything, and he meant everything, is fulfilled. If he's coming back, by the way, everything is not fulfilled. Okay, when Yehuyarel shall cut off those nations whose land Yehuyarel has given you, and you succeed them, and you dwell in their cities and their houses, well, then you shall do the following. You'll separate three cities for yourself in the midst of your land, which Yehuyarel is giving you to possess. And you prepare the way there, divide the borders of the land which Yehuyarel causes you to inherit into three parts, a place for every manslayer to flee to. And this is the case of the manslayer, who shall flee thither and live. And what he's going to point out here, and there's no shortage of detail, if it's done by accident, if it's accidental, it's manslaughter is what we would call it in modern English, was not intentional, it was accidental, then the manslayer can flee to one of these places. If, in fact, it's not premeditation or the like, well, then he's on his own. And he very well may end up dying at the hand of the kin, the avenger of blood, it's called in some places, including here. Okay, so this is the case of the manslayer who flees and lives. It is someone who kills his neighbor unawares, but didn't hate him in time past. In other words, he does not have a motive to want this person dead. And here's an example. When a man goes into the forest with his neighbor, they're going to get themselves some wood, and he strokes with his axe to cut down some tree. But, oh no! The head of the axe comes off of the shaft, and it hits his neighbor in the head and kills him. Well, then this fellow can flee to one of those cities and live. Lest the avenger of blood pursue the manslayer while his heart is hot and overtake him, because the way is long, and smite him mortally, because he wasn't deserving of death, inasmuch as he had not hated him in time past. In other words, we do not see a motive here, and that reason is sufficient to say he can flee to this place. So therefore I command you, saying, you shall separate these three cities for yourselves. And if Yehuyarel enlarges your border, as he has sworn unto your fathers, and he gives you all the land which he promised to give your fathers, well, if you shall keep all of this commandment and do it, which I command you to this day, remember, he's going to repeat it here too, to love Yehuyarel, to walk ever in his ways, well then, you shall add three more cities for you besides the first three. So that innocent blood is not shed in the midst of your land, which Yehuyarel is giving you for an inheritance, and so that blood be upon you. But, right, now we're going to get the converse. Here are the folks that are not welcome in the cities of refuge. If a man hates his neighbor, lies in wait for him, this is indicating premeditation, he rises up against him, smites him mortally so that he dies, and then he flees into one of the cities, the elders of that city will send and fetch him. They'll extradite him, basically, deliver him into the hand of the avenger of blood, so that he might die. Your eye shall not pity him, but you shall put away the blood of the innocent from Israel, that it may go well with you. Nowadays, a Soros attorney would say, hey, he gets to stay here, and furthermore, if he kills some more folks, so much the better, right? You shall not remove your neighbor's landmark, which has been set of old time, in your inheritance, which you shall inherit, in the land which Yehuyarel gives you to possess it. Don't move the landmarks so that you can basically say, hey, I got more land here. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity, any Torahlessness, crime, or any sin, in anything that he has sinned. Nope. At the mouth of two witnesses, or at the mouth of three witnesses, shall a matter be established. So it's not just, we're going to see that this is a principle that is throughout Torah, particularly though for capital crimes. It takes two or three witnesses, back when we had a rule of law and real Shoftim. Now, it says this. This is kind of fascinating, too, because, folks, this is how you get to be a Soros prosecutor. This is how you get to be a cabinet official. Looks like it's a requirement if you want to sit in the Oval Office in the whorehouse there. If an unrighteous witness rises up against any man to bear perverted witness against him. That's not what I did. You did that. How many times have we seen this, right? Somebody commits crimes, bribery. What do? They charge their political opponent with him. Yeah, we'll get our crooked prosecutor and the crooked judges to nail him with it. While my crooked son can go out and whore and do crack and even advertise it in his laptop, and I'll get away with it. What we're seeing here, what we're going to see here, is that the unrighteous witness is actually supposed to suffer the thing which he sought to lay upon his brother. Both men, between whom the controversy is, shall stand before Yahuwah, before the Kohanim and the Shoftim that shall be in those days. And the Shoftim, the judges, they shall inquire diligently. And behold, if it turns out that this witness is a false witness, and he has testified falsely against his brother, well, guess what? Now, I love this. I think this is so apropos. Again, it's really a shame that we don't have justice, justice you shall pursue. You will do unto that fellow as he had proposed to do unto his brother. So you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. He stole that. I think you should kill him for that. Think about it. How many times do we see this kind of thing literally going unpunished? And as a result, what? Lawlessness abounds. Those that remain shall hear and fear, and henceforth do not commit any more such evil in the midst of you. Well, nowadays they've taken over the cesspool cities, as we've seen. Your eye shall not pity. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. How about if you execute a whole bunch of people by fire in, a coastal city like Lahaina in Maui? How about if you execute a whole bunch of people with a Zyklon B injection that you developed at taxpayer expense? You know, you could go through the news, folks, and ask yourself how many people are deserving of far, far worse than what they have done to not just dozens of people, hundreds of people, now millions of people. The list here is also interesting, right? Everybody's heard this. Life for life, an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. The general principle is measure for measure. That which has done is that which should be done. When you go forth to battle against your enemies, this is a change of subject, and therefore at least that's where they put the chapter demarcation. When you go forth to battle against your enemies, you see horses and chariots and a people that are bigger, more powerful, at least appear to be, than you, more numerous, you're not to be afraid of them, because Yahuwah your El is with you. And remember, he brought you up out of the land of Mitzrayim. So it shall be, when you draw nigh unto the battle, that the Kohen shall approach and speak to the people. This is not the general, this is the priest, the Kohen. And he says to them, Shema Israel, hear, O Israel, you are drawing this day nigh unto battle against your enemies. Don't let your heart be faint, fear not, nor be alarmed, right? Kazak, be strong and of good courage. Don't be frightened of these folks, for Yahuwah Yirel, he is the one who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. And the officers, now we're getting to the military commanders, they shall speak to the people and say, all right, what man here has built himself a new house but has not dedicated it? Let him go, return to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man dedicate it. How about if you got a man that's planted a vineyard? Now, I think about this, and I got to admit here a joke. I planted a vineyard several years ago. I still have not used the fruit thereof. It's more of a challenge at 9,000 feet than you might think. I'm not sure that that the intent was it would go on for year after year, but I sure wish we had a vineyard that would produce. We're getting there. In any case, what man has planted a vineyard and has not used the fruit thereof? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in battle, and another man use the grapes, the fruit thereof. Now, what man is it that has taken himself, betrothed, a wife, but has not lain with her, has not consummated the union? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man take her instead. The officers shall speak to the people, and they shall say, What man here is it that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return to his house, lest his brother's heart melt as his heart. And it shall be, when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, the captains of the host shall be appointed at the head of the people. Now when you draw nigh to a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace to it. Now, we're going to see that there are a couple of cases here. If there is a city which is far enough off and does not consist of these tribes that are a known problem, then you proclaim peace to the city. Now, it shall be, if they answer, okay, we'll accept the terms, an answer of peace, and they open the gates, then it shall be that all the people that are found therein shall become tributary unto you, and they will serve you. So they literally become bondservants. But on the other hand, if they will not make peace with you, but instead make war against you, then you shall besiege it. When Yehuahurel delivers it into your hand, you shall smite every male thereof with lefi cherev, the mouth of the sword, or the edge of the sword, some renderings say. But it's really lefi, the mouth of the sword. But on the other hand, the women, the little ones, the cattle, the animals, all that's in the city, all the spoil. It's called spoil, or it's called prize, the booty, in other words. Everything that is there, you shall take for a prey unto yourself, and you shall eat the spoil of your enemies, which Yehuahurel has given you. This you shall do, and this is how you shall do it, unto all the cities which are very far off from you, which are not the cities of these nations. So now we're going to get the list of the nations that that this thing we've just heard about, offering them an offer of peace, do not apply to. Here you go. The cities of these peoples, whom Yahuwah is giving you for an inheritance, you shall save nothing alive that breathes. Now, that's quite a statement. And I've had, I don't know how many people say, oh, surely the God of the Bible would not declare that the men, women, the children would, and even the animals, they would all be killed. Well, that's precisely what he says. So, again, it always kind of bugs me when I hear people saying, well, I believe the Bible, but I don't really like what he wrote here, so I'm going to ignore that part, or this part. Okay, these peoples you shall utterly destroy. The Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, as Yehuahurel has commanded you. Now, this is... I'm not going to call it markology. It's just an explanation that I've heard. I do tend to think it has some merit, but essentially one of the understandings that you'll hear sometimes people talk about is maybe these folks aren't quite human. Maybe, as we were told, the sons of the Nephilim, the Rephaim, the Anakim, some of these other things, the descendants of the fallen ones, their DNA is tainted. Is that what's going on here? Well, it certainly is a real possibility. But again, I'm not going to say that it is or isn't, because he is specific. These people, the Hittite, Amorite, Canaanite, Perizzite, Hivite, and Jebusite, as Yahuwah has commanded you, you're destroy all in those cities that breathe. Now, here he tells us why. And this, by the way, certainly sounds like it could apply to a whole bunch of other cities that you could name on both left coasts. They, and even in... The Great Lakes area, they will teach you if you let them. So don't. They would don't let them teach you after all their abominations, things that they have done unto their gods, and that would cause you to go sin against Yehuahurel. So when you besiege a city, a long time. So you're going to besiege a city, right? Cut it off, and essentially no one goes in, no one goes out, no food, and eventually they cave. You shall not destroy the trees thereof by wielding an axe against them, for you may eat of them. So trees that produce fruit, so I'm guessing pecan trees, apple trees, fruit trees, and so forth, don't cut them down. You shall not cut them down, for it is the tree of the field of man. And why should it be besieged of you? So essentially, and by the way, the Midrash will suggest that this is a principle that they talk about. Just don't destroy things wantonly that have other uses. So fruit trees, they take a while to grow. Let them live. The only trees which you know are not trees for food, those you can cut down and use. You can build bulwarks against the city that makes war with you until it falls. So you use non-fruit trees in order to be able to do that. Okay, yeah, so we are talking about Shoftim. That is the portion tonight for those that are asking. If someone is found slain, this is chapter 21, in the land which Yehoiarib gives you to possess, laying out in the field, and you don't know who it is that has smitten him. Now, what's going on here? This is an interesting one, and honestly, as I read this, it's sad. I read this, it almost brings me to tears. So what it's saying is, here's a person that has been killed. Don't know who or why or what's going on here. We don't know who's killed him. Well, then the elders, and it's a reminder. Here's the key. It's a reminder that life is precious. Your elders and your judges, they come forth, and they shall measure the distance to the cities which are round about this person which is slain. So they basically draw out a measuring line. They say, okay, he's closer here. No, he's closer. Okay, this city is closest. So it'll turn out that when the city that is nearest to the slain man, the elders of that city will take a heifer of the herd, egal arufa, this is called, and they're going to take that heifer, and it has not been wrought with, it has not drawn in the yoke, so it's basically a young heifer that hasn't been used for work. The elders of that city shall bring that heifer down into a rough valley, which is neither to be plowed or sown, so it's a wild valley, and there you break the heifer's neck in the valley. And the priests, the Kohanim, sons of Levi, will come near, because them Yehoiarib has chosen to minister unto him, and to bless the name of Yahuwah, and according to their words shall every controversy and every stroke be. So you bring the Kohanim that are going to do the decision-making here. The elders of the city too, the ones that are nearest to the slain man, they shall wash their hands over the body of that heifer whose neck was broken in the valley, the Egla Arufa. And it is. I like the part of the Midrash that says this is an outrage. And we're supposed to recognize that it's an outrage. They're washing their hands over the body of this heifer whose neck was broken, the Egla Arufa. And they speak the following words, and they say, quote, our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. In other words, not even indirectly is the claim here, as Rashi summarizes it, are we responsible for this tragic event. So, forgive, O Yahuwah, your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not suffer the innocent blood to remain in the midst of your people Israel. And that blood, it says, shall be forgiven them. Again, I look at this, and this is what's so tragic. How far we have come from this, to the point where innocent blood, we got people that literally are, they're shedding more blood than can possibly be imagined by most of the world. This is how it ends the Torah portion. So it says, you shall put away the innocent blood from the midst of you, when you do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. I got to read that again. We literally live in a land, folks, which is drenched. And drenched is probably an understatement, in innocent blood. We have seen more atrocities in the last few years than most of us can still believe are even possible. Exactly the opposite. Shoftim, judges, righteous judges, Zadok, you shall have, you shall pursue. Hardly. The point of the Parsha, so by doing these things, walking in obedience, you shall put away the innocent blood from the midst of you when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Amen.